Okay, let's start the show.
It's November 6, 2014. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. I'm Will Smith, seated directly to my left. Norman Chan, how are you doing today,
sir? Hello.
That is a fancy new computer you have on your desk.
Something I've been testing.
Interesting.
We'll talk about it.
About testing things.
What we've been testing.
Okay, sounds good. Jeremy Williams, how are you? Welcome back.
Hi, thanks.
I really, really like that shirt.
Thanks, man. I learned about it at your Tested live show when one of your viewers was wearing it.
Tested the show, you mean?
Yes.
On stage at the Castro Theater on October 25th, 2014. Tickets are all gone. If people want to go now, it's too late. They have to wait until, let's say, middle of next week.
And I liked the shirt so much that I listened to his tweets and I went online and bought it as soon as I could.
That was from Matt Miller. He's a friend of the site. We like Matt a lot.
Very nice guy.
He's a wonderful man. He's a good kid, too, all around. His son is also a delightful young man. Speaking of events, this last weekend was Halloween. All Hallows Eve.
Yes.
Did anybody do anything special to celebrate the event? Did you wear, Norm, did you wear like a slutty Norman Chan costume or anything like that?
No such costume exists.
What do you do?
I think it's just a pair of cutoffs with a t-shirt and black glasses.
What do you do on Halloween if you don't have kids?
You go out to drink.
Oh, of course.
I've been told it's one of the great drinking holidays.
Is that right?
Yeah.
It is.
Did you wear costumes?
I did wear costumes.
What was your costume, Norm?
Without a lot of time to prepare, I was Charlie Day from Pacific Rim.
So, like a white lab coat, kind of torn up with some blood.
No lab coat.
He had no lab coat.
Did anybody recognize you?
One person did. I had my giant isopod, which looked like a kaiju skid mite.
Oh, so you had like the plush one?
Flops. Okay. I drew rudimentary tattoos on my arms with Sharpies.
Okay.
Wow.
Apparently, the best way to get rid of Sharpies on your arms:
grow new skin.
That is probably the most effective way, but in terms of if you want to get it quickly, suntan lotion.
Really?
What? It gets it off?
It will smear it and...
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting solvents.
I was a very rough Robin Williams.
Hold on.
Post or...
Mork.
Okay.
But not like wearing his suit from the end of the show, like, you know, like suspenders, rainbow suspenders, yeah, and dual color shirt.
High pants.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Jocked up pants. And I did get recognized by a few people, and everyone who did seemed sentimental about it, which I appreciated. That was like an homage.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's what you want.
And they were nice about it, and they seemed to appreciate it. So that was the idea.
So you went to old dad with older kids Halloween.
Yep.
Older kids.
Did you go like street trick or treating? You go send them door to door in the Mission.
Yeah, we went street trick or treating.
Avoid the crack house, kids. You don't want their candy.
It was a good time. My son dressed up as a demon, and
what kind of demon? Like a
generic but very scary, horns? Scary looking demon. No, it was more of like a skull mask with hood and a shield
stuff.
And sword and just like draped and like he looked. We actually looked like Robin Williams in The Grim Reaper, which...
Oh, that's a little unfortunate.
I didn't realize until we were driving to trick-or-treat to this spot, but yeah, anyway.
But this was a costume of his own choosing, I assume.
Yes.
He's 8? 9?
He's 7.
7, okay.
Yep, he's 7. And the girl went off with the mom, and they did their own little...
Was it like princess trick-or-treating?
No, it was. She was a lollipop girl.
Okay.
She was like covered in lollipop
like from
candies.
Wizard of Oz?
It's very generic. It's just like candy. It's just like sweetness.
Okay.
If you meet my daughter,
she's a very sweet girl.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
And so they, like, she wasn't up for the big trick-or-treat we had in mind. And so.
You guys went big.
My girl has a little less candy than my son.
So my... I hadn't been trick-or-treating in earnest. Like, we've had a house in the suburbs, and the trick-or-treating has waxed and waned as the neighborhood kids have gotten older. Like, our house, our street isn't... It's full of a bunch of people that have, like, college-age kids.
They're not cycling
and then
in younger
us.
Kids?
No, like, nobody does the... When we first moved there 7 or 8 years ago,
yeah,
people got, like, all super decorated, and all the parents were dressed up, and, like, I came home from work that night. I was like, oh man, we are woefully underprepared.
You gotta up your game.
Yeah, we got up. So then we upped our game, and then the fucking kids stopped coming. So I think one, like the first year, I had to go out and buy more candy. Because like the we did what we did when we lived in the city. We like bought like a bag with Snickers and Twix and a bunch of other stuff.
Yes,
and that lasted. That was good. Yeah, yeah. one mix, that was gone in maybe 30 minutes. The first year we lived in this house.
You, did you get everyone kid? How much candy are you supposed to give each kid?
One bar.
One tiny bar. So these are snack size.
So traditionally, I would do a hand, reach my hand in, grab a big adult size handful of candy and dump it in their bucket when we lived in San Francisco.
That's too much.
Because otherwise I'd end up eating it because it wouldn't all get used.
That's fine.
That worked for you.
No, it was bad. It's bad for a lot of reasons. Then when we moved to the burbs and that first year we had all these trick-or-treaters, I went from the handful method to one bar per kid. Right. No, you don't get to choose. Just get them in and out as fast as you can.
You can't let their hands anywhere near that.
Fuck that. No, I didn't get to choose. Somebody would give me Smarties. They should get Smarties.
Smarties are great.
No, they're not. Smarties are like antacids for
children. What about the kid with the peanut allergy? Are you going to give him a peanut M&M's?
He's, you know, if he wants to go trick-or-treating, he's got to learn to avoid the Snickers.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a
It's spirit. Darwinian Halloween at Will's house.
And did you also take the candy away from your child?
Well,
the morning. I ate it all. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's horrible.
See, oh, okay. Then you draw a line.
So, okay. So then
it's
the next year, I bought like 15, 20 pounds of candy, like $50 worth of candy.
You were ready.
I was ready to go. Three fucking kids, because it was not a weekend and it was like Tuesday afternoon and it rained.
Yeah.
And then Gina and I were like, well, what are we going to do with all this candy? I tried to take it back. They won't take unused Halloween candy back.
It's discounted immediately.
Right. So then I just donated it because otherwise I would have gained about 30 pounds.
Yep.
But this was the first real Halloween for like with a kid for us.
So you didn't stay home and hand out candy.
We did a little bit of we you know, with a 1.5 year old.
You don't go out and hand out candy.
You're not out that long.
We went out at like 4.
Right. Yeah. You don't walk around
and
with
we were
trash
back by
full 6:30. Candy. And then like,
hey kids, you want my candy? It's in my pants. Pocket.
Oh boy.
It's all
I do not.
Soft.
Oh no.
Kind of melted.
Don't want that candy.
So yeah, it was raining. So we went to the mall. Which is where apparently lots of people bring their toddlers.
That's interesting.
I'd never done that. I didn't realize that was a thing.
And the stores all are prepared for that and they hand out candy.
Some are prepared, some not so much.
What about you know, in the Christmas time, which starting now.
The holiday season started 2 days ago.
There's usually a Santa or a giant tree that people can get their photos taken with. Is there something similar for Halloween?
You know, they missed an opportunity. A photographer set up, like a kid photographer set up in Stonestown Mall on Halloween evening could have made bank. Because taking pictures, it was all like sub 3-year-old kids.
Yep.
And they're really hard to photograph.
You don't even have to hire Santa.
No. You just get a pumpkin chair park the kid there with some candy.
I think you're right about
Headless Horseman.
That's too creepy. You gotta go easy on the little kids. They get freaked out about stuff.
Bunch of free jack-o'-lanterns.
Yeah.
That's what I see.
But we went with Gary's daughter, Gary and his daughter, and bopped around the mall. And the funny thing is, the places that I wouldn't have expected to have candy did have candy. And the places that I didn't expect to have candy, that I expected would have candy, like the kids' clothing stores, nope.
What about C's?
C's, we missed C's, but Godiva was handing out like super dope candies for the littles.
Godivas?
Godivas, yeah, like little truffles.
That's fancy. That's for real.
There was a wonderful moment, and I won't go into this too much, but there was a wonderful moment when my daughter realized that the thing that she was carrying around with her was full of candy.
Oh no.
She's not really had a lot of candy up to this point. And then she realized that she could open suckers.
Oh no.
Because, you know, she just reaches and grabs them, jams it in her mouth. So at that point, from that point on, she was double fisting suckers. Like a little candy addict. It was really funny.
If she's anything like my little girl, she'll maybe this Halloween or next, she'll start asking pretty much around now, when's the next Halloween? And it will just be, she'll be distraught
when
over how long.
1 year?
Because of the candy or because of the dressing up? Like,
no,
what's she into?
No, entirely because of the candy.
Oh, see, my daughter got into she was like super into the costume. Because
she can do that any day.
Depends on the costume, yeah. But yeah, she can.
Around the house? What?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Absolutely.
Capes and hammers and shields and all sorts of Marvel Comics characters.
Oh, yeah. They're all licensed and available.
I'm pretty sure my daughter thought we'd start going trick-or-treating every weekend.
Like, really?
When she first started
When she
going.
Got it?
Yeah. So that was a bit of a disappointment.
Mine hasn't shown any interest in the candy. Like, she's forgotten that the candy existed at this point.
Hey, good for you.
Occasionally, we'll bust out a sucker for her if she, like, is being particularly nice.
Yeah.
But like she was really into the costume part.
That's cool.
Like she, we did
a cosplayer.
We did. I think maybe we did the whole thing where, you know, like when you're getting your dog or cat to wear a costume, you have to acclimate them over a period of time. So we did that. We put her in the costume a couple of days in advance, and then again, and she got eye makeup and the whole thing, and she was super into it. Like she'd find a mirror and she'd be like, and point at herself and, you know, say her character and all
she
that.
She looked
stuff.
Adorable.
She was very cute. She's a cute baby. Thank you, Jeremy. Mm. The day after Halloween, though, you and I did something together.
It was Saturday night from 4 to 11.
So I am 8-Bit and Double Fine hosted an event in downtown San Francisco that was super rad if you're into indie video games called Day of the Devs. It's the second time they did it, but I found out about it last year after it was already done and it was too late to go. But you reminded me this year and I already had it on my calendar. It's a great event. They got like, I think 20 or 30 indie games from, you know, teams ranging in like one to two people sizes up to, you know, some of their Double Fine games like Massive Chalice and the Grim Fandango remaster and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I would say 30 games is on the low end. I thought it was maybe closer to 40.
It might have been
quite a few games there.
And it was a delightfully curated list. So I know Greg Rice at Double Fine had worked with the IM8-Bit guys to get the folks to get games that they were all stoked about.
Is that right?
And it was a really, really good list of games. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to pull it up so we can hit some of the high points. But we got to play iDarb.
I didn't go last year either. Yeah, that was
first time you played iDarb?
Second. Oh. I hand delivered a game frame to the people who make iDarb. That was my in for playing iDarb.
Mm-hmm. You should be marketing the game frame to people who make pixel art games.
Well, I thought it was very cool. They incorporated the game frame into their area. So they put the game frame onto a big red box. Like box?
Yeah,
that one. And it was and then they were running artwork from the game on the game frame. So it
very
was,
cool.
Yeah, the coolest use I've seen.
So iDarb, if you don't know what it is a 8-player like team. It's a team based platformer that has like goal scoring elements like from NHL, like from old NHL or FIFA games or stuff like that. So basically, you have these 2 4-player teams. You bounce around like madmen on the screen, and you have to get a ball into a goal. But there's all sorts of like. There's neat mechanics that you kind of discover over time. Like you can wiggle the stick and you go faster. You can, you know, you can stun people around you to steal the ball and stuff like that. And it reminds me a lot of like 16-bit sports, you know, couch sports games.
Yeah. There's an old Unreal Tournament mode that I used to play exclusively. Yeah. It was called Bombing Run.
Oh, Bombing Run was great.
Did you play it?
Yeah, totally.
Because nobody played
it. We played Bombing Run, dude, when you were at Future.
Did we?
Yes.
Well, it's the only mode of UT that I played. No, not when I was at Future. No, I played it for real like after I left. Like,
2004?
UT 2003 is what the one I
maybe
played.
It was when we were podcasting.
Probably.
Then. Yeah.
Anyway, this is the first time I've played like a sports game like that where you can pass the ball to your teammates and score goals with, you know, get assists and do long range goals. It's a lot of fun.
It's super reminiscent of, to me, like sports games before they turned into Sims, when they were still like NBA Jams and NFL Blitz and those types of games, but distilled way down. And the art's really good. And also, we're in the game.
Well, that's the best part.
We are in the game as characters. Anyone can be in the game.
You can add your own characters, but we're in the game when you buy it. Everybody gets us.
Right. It's cool.
Test the team.
You can design your own characters in the game, and then you get a QR code on the screen that anyone else can scan to get your character.
Yes.
Which I thought was brilliant.
Yeah.
And then people can interact with the players and you can, with live streaming.
Well, that's nuts. Yeah. That's crazy.
So people, when they watch, because it'll theoretically be built in, you know, with Twitch integration,
right.
You can have unique hashtags to tweet, and they'll parse it and then send information down to your game and mix it up.
So they add power-ups. Mutators. They make everybody look like one character, so it's like clowns, so it's hard to see what's going on.
They can fill the board with beer.
I haven't seen that one yet.
They're not unveiling all of these. They're going to let people discover them.
So good. Well, we're going to get Mike Myko to, he's an old friend of ours from Future Days, and he's going to bring the game over, and we'll do a live stream at some point between now and when it comes out. I don't know I don't think they have announced a release date yet. But
my favorite part of the game, and I said this to Mike, I said, you're going to sell games because of halftime.
The halftime stuff's really good. Those mini games I would play on their own.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, there's a random game that's retro inspired every halftime, and you don't know what it's going to be, and you have to figure out the controls and how to play, and then win within, you know, like 10 seconds.
Sometimes they're like two-stick shooters. Sometimes they're...
There's one that's based on combat, like the old Atari game.
Yeah.
It's cool.
It's really... And there's online multiplayer, too. So this is the other thing that's important, is if you want to play, you can put all of your team on one couch and then take people from the internet, which I think is what we have to do when the game comes out.
Sure.
Like, we have to take all comers and we'll do some streaming.
And it's a lot of players.
Eight players, 4v4.
That's great.
Yeah.
Way more than, you know, normal.
So you said you'd played most of the games at Day of the Devs.
I had played a lot of the games at Day of the Devs. There were quite a few things. So it was an all-ages event, which I really liked.
I guess it wasn't last year. I didn't realize that.
Last year was in a bar, I think, so they couldn't do all ages.
So it was in the old Mint building this year.
Yes,
which is a beautiful space.
We'd been there for the Parrot event when they launched their new quad, but we didn't really get to explore then. And it's a really, really neat space.
Yeah.
When you went downstairs into the vault area where they had a lot of the VR games, then you could actually see the old vault doors and see how the locks worked and all that stuff.
Feet thick, these doors.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was really cool. And there's a bunch of them.
It's like old serial comics.
Yeah.
Superman.
Yeah.
Style doors.
It's like what before you saw Goldfinger and knew what Fort Knox looked like in James Bond world.
Yeah.
It's what you imagined Fort Knox would look like.
And most of the games in the vaults were Oculus games.
Yes.
I don't know if that was coincidence or if that was kind of part of the aesthetic, but it was interesting because they were packed with people, whereas all the other games had maybe a line of two or three people. Mm-hmm. And I've been so spoiled with having an Oculus I forget that people haven't experienced it yet. Mm-hmm. So they're not just in line to play the game. They're in line to try an
Oculus.
They
want to touch the virtual reality.
They want to see the future.
Yeah.
But they had I didn't really get to play any games because I brought my daughter and we were there being social and just kind of looking at stuff to play in the future. Yeah. Some of the Oculus stuff looked really good. The Classroom Aquatic game, which is basically a quiz game where you have to answer pop quiz, but you're a dolphin and you don't know the dolphin answers to the questions. So you have to extrapolate and or BS. That seemed fairly ridiculous. Please Don't Space Dog is like an event game. It's a exhibition game only because it requires this ridiculous controller with dozens and dozens of buttons and stuff on it. Mm-hmm. And you have to control your underwater spaceship with the buttons. It almost looks like a MIDI sequencer or something.
Wild. That's an Oculus game?
That was an Oculus game. No, that's not an Oculus game.
Okay.
Wait, no, that is an Oculus game.
How do you feel all those buttons?
I think the buttons are represented in the virtual reality.
Oh, interesting.
So you then have to look down and know where your hands are.
Oh, boy.
I almost...
Calibrate not only for your head, but also for placement of controller.
Like I said, I didn't play it, but I think that one, they may even have like a leap motion on so they can know where your hands are in relation to the
leap motion. It's getting better all the time.
It's constantly getting better.
I was impressed by the indie aesthetic, which most of the games upstairs kind of share. You know, it's like most of these games have teams of maybe three people, maybe a couple more. And all of them have this, they're either pixel art or they're flat, you know, vector
shaded polys. Yeah.
Yeah. And they all sort of share this aesthetic, which looks great, but it doesn't require that much, you know, I mean, it's a huge number of man hours in the art department.
Well, the vector stuff is maybe a byproduct of smaller development teams, but the pixel art stuff takes just as much time, if not more. I think it's just a trend right now. At PAX, so many pixel art games.
The thing about pixel art is that it's more approachable. Like, you don't have to know how to do 3D modeling and
right.
It's
and
still,
that kind of stuff.
Or even illustration in the same way. I don't know. Like, you could have somebody who's great at pixel art, but not necessarily like a great drawer. If you were going
to
scan the artwork.
It's still as I'm sure anyone who has done pixel art animation, for example.
Yep.
That is a lot of work.
There's a lot of work. It's a special talent, but I think in order to get to that finished that finished level, maybe doesn't require quite as many man hours as a modern day high definition scanned
as viewers kind of game. We can't distinguish as easily high quality pixel art, the subtlety that goes into that as opposed to just, you know, simple pixel art.
Well, and the other thing that a lot of times the stuff that we see in pixel art and indie games right now, especially, looks the way we remember 16-bit games looking. But in reality, if you look at like a game like Fez, there's way, way, way more pixels in play there than ever would have been on a 16-bit console. Because like when Fez blinks, there's four animations for the eye closing. And stuff like that. Yeah. So, like, if you want to see what somebody can do in the modern era with pixel art, look at a game like Shovel Knight, which actually lives in the constraints of a NES game for the most part. You know, those are it's just a lovely aesthetic. I think there were quite a few games that weren't pixel art games.
No, it's true. It's true.
Although I'm not. Did you see Push Me, Pull You?
No. Wait, I don't know. So. I'm sure I saw it, but
is that it? Push Me, Pull You. Yeah. So it's a two-player competitive game where each person controls a worm, and the goal is to they're like Nobby Nobby Boy worms.
Yep.
And the goal is to push past the other person and pull them to your side. I think it looked, people were yelling and screaming, and you know, we were like 3 minutes away from people whipping 20s in the air, gambling on that at the end of the at the end of the night.
My son's favorite, and that was also fun. I got to bring my son to this thing, so he got a, you know, got a look at the games industry to a degree. And his favorite game was Kyoto Wild, which was a sword fighting game. Incredibly simplistic. There's four players on screen, one hit, one kill.
Okay.
And you sort of move around the screen and stay out of people's radius of where they can
swing. In three dimensions.
No, it's 3D, but it's sort of like, you know, it's like Abe's Odyssey kind of girl shaded. You know, geometry.
A good sword fighting game has always been tough to do just because of the dexterity required that you can't simulate.
Yeah.
What was the Samurai Gun, which came out earlier this year or last year? I can't remember which now. That's in that same thing, but it's a 2D platformer kind of game, almost like Joust or something like that.
Nidhogg.
Nidhogg, yes.
And Nidhogg had basic sword fighting mechanics.
Nidhogg's more like Tug of War, though, you're stabbing someone. I got to play Gang Beasts with people, which I hadn't really done before.
What was that?
Gang Beasts is kind of a floppy physics wrestling game. So if you imagine, like, if you're familiar with Quap or something like that, that has kind of intentionally ungainly controls, you have these pudgy, floofy monsters that you can pick up and throw people into. Fire pits and like grinder pits and all sorts of horrible ways to kill your enemies. It was fun. I enjoyed that. And then Lovers in Dangerous Space Time, which is something I saw at PAX a couple years ago that I instantly fell in love with.
I can't believe it's been in development so long.
They've added a ton to it from what I was able to see.
I'm
since
worried
I saw
about
it
that
last
game.
Time.
There's a lot of depth in that game. It could be a shallow game.
I think that's why they've spent so much time on it. Huh. Now it seems like you're bopping your spaceship around an actual universe and planets and stuff like that. And there's a lot more going on than just the initial, hey, I have to fight the monsters.
I haven't seen too many games that have that style of team play where you're really going to be communicating back and forth with your co-pilot.
Like, it's like Space Team, right?
Yeah.
Which is,
but in a video game, like a real game.
In a game with goals and stuff.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So yeah, it was a lovely event. I think they're going to keep doing it every year. They had some music, Dose One and Disaster Piece, and Phil Fish played. I think Phil Fish DJ'd, but it was a good time, and highly recommend it if you get a chance to go. And Spy Party was there. If you haven't played Spy Party, you should. I think you can even buy it now, but it's a super neat asymmetrical experience. So anyway, that's Day of the Devs. What else has happened this week? This is a listener choice episode. We should probably mention that. So these topics were brought to you by the audience, the people who follow me on Twitter and jumped into the Word doc, the Google doc, when I shared the link. First thing on the list is Microsoft Band. This came out the day that we released the podcast last week, which was the day after, or maybe 2 days after we recorded the podcast last week. What do you think about this thing, Norm?
I think it's too expensive for what they're selling it for.
What exactly does it do?
So it is a, they're specifically calling it not a watch because it does a smartwatch because it's not supposed to have all the same types of actions that you can do with a smartwatch. But it does have a biometric sensor on the bottom, heart rate sensor. The screen is a wide screen on the top. I'm not exactly sure what the resolution is. It is full color. And then it displays things like your heart rate, your activity, and also things like time, notifications. But what's interesting is that even though Microsoft is making it and selling it for $200, it is cross-platform. So there are apps for both Windows Phone and also iOS and Android. Plus, the software is supposed to be open. The API is supposed to be open, so it will work with other platforms like the Jawbone platform.
Oh, so like... Does that mean that like the Pebble Run Keeper will be able to tap into it and use it to display stuff if they want?
Yes.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. I mean, so it's something they call a lifestyle band. It's something that they want you to wear, you know, to sleep, like the Jawbone, you know, wake you up, monitor your sleep habits. You, I'm not exactly sure what the battery life is, but it's definitely not. It's more in line with a Jawbone than it is with the Apple Watch.
But it, I mean, it's at a price that's directly competitive with like the Pebble Steel, which seems like a much more functional device. Outside of the fact that it doesn't, the activity tracking that you get through Jawbone or one of the other API fitness trackers, the fitness trackers that hook into the Pebble API, like you don't get sleep tracking and stuff like that with the Pebble.
Nope.
But like the Pebble does 90% of what the Jawbone Up does, and then it also does notifications and is actually a pretty good watch.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I feel like $200 is too expensive for this.
$200 is really expensive. It does have, you know, the UV heartbeat sensor.
How does that just look at your skin flushing, capillary flushing
on the bottom?
Just like the Apple Watch.
Same thing.
Yeah.
But it's supposed to be tied into Microsoft's larger health initiative, which this was announced with. And it seems like, I don't know if they rushed the product out, but they just wanted to get a product out, some hardware out along with it. I'm not super excited about it.
I think I'm going to get one in. Just, it's not a super huge priority, but I'll use it before we do the Jawbone Up video. Because I think that, like, if you can combine the Pebble and the stuff that you get with the Jawbone into one device, that's kind of interesting to me. But
it works best with Windows phones, so you better switch over to a Windows phone to use it.
That's pretty funny.
Will Mail work with an iPhone?
I think Mail work. Cortana is where the tie-in with Windows phone, so the voice stuff.
Right. Oh, so you don't have the voice search capability. Interesting. I don't know. I mean, the other thing that it has going against it is it looks, it doesn't look like something you would wear if you're a normal person.
Looks like the Jawbone Fuel Band.
Yeah, looks like Nike Fuel Band.
But the Fuel Band was less obtrusive than this. It had a really subtle screen. It just looks like a weird plastic bracelet. You know, it and the Up are very similar. This is
another weird plastic bracelet.
But it's a much bigger weird plastic bracelet.
It's not that bigger.
It looks bigger to me.
People wear different size bracelets.
I guess that's true. speaking of
Wonder Woman has really big bracelets.
They're made of corundrum or something, right? What's the material?
I don't know.
Oh, come on, Norm.
It's
bulletproof.
Bulletproof. Indestructible.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Don't you remember? Big part of her name?
Yeah.
Linda Carter. Yeah, that's right.
Will is now gesturing.
Arm gestures.
Totally forgot about that. I love that show.
We watched that a lot. That and the Hulk were very popular
in
our house.
Yes.
The Hulk scared the shit out of me every single time he transformed. Because I thought that could just happen to anybody. Like, if you got angry enough, you would turn into the Hulk.
Life lessons.
Lou Ferrigno would explode out of you, and all of a sudden your pants would be torn, and they'd be purple.
That's how your parents kept you from freaking out?
They kept me in line.
Don't Hulk.
you better calm down, Will, or you're going to Bixby out.
I can feel it. Oh, no. Is this what it feels like? No, that's just puberty.
Speaking of weird-shaped wristwatches, there have been a series of increasingly well-sourced Apple Watch pricing rumors. You and Jeremy were discussing this before the show.
I don't know how well-sourced they are.
Well, there's also the release date.
Which is
May.
It's supposed to be spring.
Spring.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, at the
very end.
The new head of retail.
Right, Angela. Oh gosh, what's her name? Lansbury?
No, that's.
She did like Murder.
Murder. She wrote. And
Angela, I forget her name, last name. But
Merkel.
No, she ran Burberry. That's why I'm thinking.
Appleby.
Is that her name?
Anyway,
Angela Arendt.
She wrote an internal memo that mentioned to her team that we have to get ready for the next year, what with the Apple Watch coming out in the spring and all. So I guess that's as close.
I don't think that was surprising. I mean, I would hope that it wouldn't be next fall.
I mean,
if you talk about product launches, Apple wants you to spend. They don't want you to spend all your money at once. They know that in September you're going to buy an iPhone. Late September you're going to buy an iPhone. Some people. They know that in the November, many people are going to look to maybe buy iPads. They know that because of Intel's CPU cycle, the refresh cycle, that sometime in the summer, when the late spring, early summer is when the new MacBooks come out, which time for, you know, whatever OS release they have, That leaves the spring open, which used to be the iPad time.
Hmm.
I mean, it used to be the iPhone time.
Right. But I mean, if you look at laptops and iPads, I think they're looking at that as something that people don't upgrade every year or 2 years or 3 years. It's a much longer upgrade cycle. I think they're going to try to pitch the watch.
It's also mindshare.
No, that's true.
I don't think they have these things like finished waiting to sell them, though.
Oh, no. Yeah. But as soon as possible. They want to get these out.
Yeah. So hopefully it's
spring makes sense.
Spring would be March 20th.
So what's the pricing rumor then?
$500 for the stainless steel one.
That's the cheap one?
That's the cheap one.
No, I'm sorry.
That's the mid-range one. Yeah. That's not the sport.
There's $300, $400 presumably then?
For the brushed. Yeah.
That seems
for the sport.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that I thought $500 for the low-end one.
You did.
Would have been a fair price for Apple's, would be in line with Apple's pricing and would be enough that people would sell a lot.
I think that there's a reason that iPhones start at $199 or $299. And I think that they sell, like if you look at where they sell the most of their inventory, especially early on, it's in the low end of those phones.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the hump of sales are going to be.
So that sport brushed aluminum one is also, I'll remind you, the one that doesn't have the sapphire glass.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I've never had sapphire glass. I'm happy with my iPhone so far. Maybe the Gorilla is good enough. I'll probably go with that brushed aluminum one.
I scratched the Pebble Steel within 2 weeks of getting it. And
what does that
Gorilla
have?
Glass.
Gorilla?
Yeah.
Hmm. It is exposed. Like, it's not in your pocket. I guess it is out there in the world all day long.
Well, and they, you know, I have to say, I mean, I dropped the Duke last week. 2 weeks ago,
that
3 weeks
the,
ago,
six plus
the iPhone 6 Plus, and it cracked in a completely novel way when I dropped
How
it.
How did it crack?
So instead of
is that you replaced it already?
No.
Oh, it's still there.
No, so it only like I dropped it flat on the face in a way that I expected it to come out in tiny little pieces.
And this is not sapphire.
No, that's their different. You know, it's a new glass this time. It's not just straight Gorilla Glass.
Yeah, it didn't shatter all the way.
It just chipped.
Chip.
Man, so man. I mean, there's still the possibility that it's going to explode the next time it gets dropped. But, you know, if the watch is made of that stuff, it also isn't scratching as much. Like, the micro scratchers on the front of the Surface are much less pronounced than they have been on previous phones a month or two in.
Are we sure that the stainless steel and the expensive gold one is going to be actual sapphire, 100% sapphire, or a composite?
No, it's the sapphire glass. It's never been sapphire. It's sapphire-ish.
Right, but with the company that... The Sapphire company manufacturer that went out of business.
They entered bankruptcy. They didn't go out of business.
So they're still operating and still making.
Yeah, they just had
but
to.
But they also had, is part of their ways with Apple.
Presumably, but.
No, that's confirmed.
Oh, it is.
What are you saying? That's going to affect what if it's a 100%
right. I didn't,
Sapphire?
Didn't, wasn't the term of their settlement with Apple that they give Apple all of the machines that they use to make the forges that they use to make the Sapphire glass?
The forges.
There's the forges of Baron Dur down in New Mexico
all
or Arizona
forges.
Or wherever it is. Right.
Pounding out that sapphire for our technology, for your magic watch.
More idle speculation. PlayStation 4 2.0 bricked a seemingly substantial number of consoles. Or maybe didn't brick. Maybe bricked is too strong, but caused problems.
It's scary when people got auto-update on.
Yeah, so well, you auto-update, and then the next time the PlayStation went into rest mode, it just wouldn't turn back on. So the sleep mode killed it.
Serves them right for stopping playing on the PlayStation.
Wait, what?
They shouldn't have let it go back in the rest mode. They should be playing their PlayStation.
Oh, never stop playing.
Never stop
playing.
That's
what you're saying.
Jeremy Always Williams. Be playing.
The solution is to turn off sleep mode. I think they've even pushed a hotfix out. Sony didn't seem concerned, but they've always been a little slow on addressing stuff like this. So I don't know what the latest details on this are. But anyway, if you have a PlayStation 4 and you've updated it, maybe turn off sleep mode for the next couple of days.
Hmm.
I haven't had any problems on my PlayStation 4.
I haven't turned mine on.
Hmm. That seems about normal.
Really?
In about 2 months.
Oh, okay. I play Spelunky on mine.
Do you?
Yeah.
You can play that on the computer.
I can.
Yeah.
I like to do the daily challenge. I can do it 2 or 3 times now because it's in different places. Let's see. Kodak released an action camera this morning. This is announced. Yes. It's a $400 action camera with a big ass wide angle fisheye lens, which is kind of unusual. Like action cameras typically have big ass fisheye lenses.
Like, Non-removable. That's just the lens.
It's fixed.
Okay.
But this one, instead of being like a 170 degree field of view or whatever it is on the current GoPros, is a full half sphere.
It's 214.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's a lot.
It just means that when you shoot it, you can get a full dome, and then you can theoretically composite, cut out just the edge of that dome and get a panoramic strip that goes all the way around.
That's going to be great for people doing VR video.
That's exactly what I said. But like the VR video that Parrot was doing, if you look around, you just, it's going to be sharpest in the center. And then everywhere on the outside, it's going to be skewed. You have to re-skew it, which is fine. But then the image quality is going to be suspect.
It kind of depends on what the resolution of the sensor is, too,
it's 10 megapixel, and that's just for photos.
So what's 10 megapixel?
It's not that much.
What's the equivalent of video?
Regardless of the number of pixels, the size of the sensor is a GoPro size sensor, which is small.
Okay, fair enough. But, you know, the reason you can get 1080p video on a, say, GoPro 3 or GoPro 4 in four different aspect ratios or four different field of views is because it's a really high, much higher resolution sensor, and they do the crop on the camera, right? So
not exactly.
Well, they're not extrapolating and filling in. They're not making up data, are they?
No, but you only take information when you're shooting video because of the amount of processing power it takes. It's not like if you have a 16 megapixel sensor, you're just getting these. You can have the option of just getting the center.
No. But that is exactly what they do.
That's
with the GoPro. How do they get a crop if that's not what they do? They only use certain portions of the sensor.
Yes, but it's not like you're only using the exact 1920 pixels in the center.
No. When you want to do the wide field, then they do every fourth pixel or whatever. Yeah. And so on and so forth.
I'm just saying that the image quality, I think, is going to be very suspect.
Well, it's an action camera. What do you expect?
So I'm not excited at all about it. And it's expensive.
It is. $400 is pretty pricey. I saw a couple of friends of ours were talking about strapping on the front of a surfboard so you could get a panorama that includes both where you're going and you on the surfboard, which sounds cool. Like, I see. Like, I think adding more capability to that market isn't a bad thing. The other thing that's worrisome is that it's Kodak isn't a company anymore. No. They're a holding company. So somebody's just licensed the Kodak name, painted their action camera yellow, and is calling it. It's just like Polaroid or any of the old film companies that are no longer in existence.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how that is when it's available. Did they give an availability on that, or is it just announced?
I think it's this holiday.
Makes sense. The next generation and PC versions of GTA 5 were announced earlier this week, and they're going to have, you can play it in first person.
Well, they had
first
been announced
person
already.
Mode.
They announced the first person mode.
Yeah.
And it looks really cool.
It also takes advantage of the higher resolution. I think there's higher resolution textures.
Assets in general are higher resolution. Yeah.
So it makes a lot more sense that you'd be able to put the camera into the and explore that world in first person. I don't know if I'd want to.
That's the thing.
Given that the game wasn't designed that way. But
presumably they've done the work to make it
not,
work well.
But not just the UI, but like just the driving mechanics and the running mechanics, all the speed of every single NPC and player, all that stuff was calibrated for a third person game.
Yeah.
So I mean it's definitely suspect, but it, like Will said, I'm amazed. Like even the camera, like when you go in to take a photo in the game, they have the whole GUI in there. When you're first person shooting, running down, you got the gun.
Can you iron sight? I didn't see that.
I wouldn't be surprised. They haven't shown everything, obviously, but I mean, inside of cars, it all looks pretty damn well thought out.
I'm going to be interested to see if the scale, because I always like the thing that always strikes me about open world games is how much of a variance the scale of scale there is.
Yeah,
like the GTA feels like a much bigger, more open world than something like Dead Rising, where even though you can still get in cars and stuff, and there's roads, and theoretically roads are the same width everywhere in the United States, it feels dramatically different.
Mm-hmm.
Roads are definitely wider in those games.
Well, in GTA, it feels like the roads are especially wide. You know, like a standard car lane in GTA 5 isn't wide enough to hold two full cars, mm-hmm. more or less side by side. Yeah. So I'm going to be interested to see if that, like putting that in first person, if that's going to feel like a barren open wasteland or if it actually feels okay.
So many closed doors, locked doors everywhere.
Yeah.
Low-res locked doors.
The thing is, you have to wonder if those guys are playing around. They have to have implemented an Oculus test. They got that first person mode. All they had to do was add support for the Oculus Rift. And it might not look great,
Yeah.
They probably won't release it, but man, you know they're trying it.
It's it doesn't have to look. I mean, the Alien Isolation thing is enough.
Yeah.
Like if you for people who, it's not like normal consumers have Oculuses and want to plug them in. The people who want to noodle around with that stuff are perfectly willing to deal with rough edges.
Yes.
And Alien Isolation is a perfect example of that. Like, I was totally fine with that game being janky as shit in Oculus mode.
You're talking
because I turned it on manually.
Right.
About maybe multiplayer Oculus first person for people in the GTA world.
Oh, man.
Dicking around.
As long as everyone's on Oculus, it's an even playing field.
I want to do the pool. Have you ever done the pool parachuting where you get in an airplane, fly above the suburbs where the pools are, get as high as you can, and then jump out of a plane and try to land in the pool without using your parachute?
I love it.
Because you don't die. If you hit water, you don't die. So
that's just like real life.
Just we're like
real
life, yeah. Like exactly. The Diesel.
I never saw that movie. Was it any good?
No.
I can't imagine. Let's see. Internet Arcade. This is a fantastic story. Earlier this week, the folks at the Internet Archive released first off, the folks at the Internet Archive's goal is to archive everything. They're the brains from Futurama, right? They want to make copies of the internet as it exists every day and everything on the internet, everything related to the internet, everything digital that's kind of ephemeral.
Right. Their main thing used to be simply archiving the web.
Yes.
So like for the 10% of your listeners who haven't ever heard of the Internet Archive, if you ever wanted to see an old version of a website, that's where you go. And you type in the web address and you pull it up.
You can see what Tested looked like in 2009.
Yeah.
That we sold drug testing kits, I'm pretty sure. you can go and look at old versions of like you can see old designs of websites, stuff that once we changed the design of Tested, that old design is gone forever, except for in the Internet Archive.
And then they moved into movies and music, and there's all kinds of...
they don't archive films. They are like Prelinger Archive has a bunch of short films there's and that. Stuff like that.
But they do archive documentaries, you know, modern day movies and
really?
Things like that.
And books.
That have an open license that will allow them to put them up there.
They also have a big facility up in the North Bay.
That's right.
Like physical books.
Physical books.
That's right.
Wow.
The physical archive of the internet.
Yeah.
The San Francisco Bay Area doesn't seem like a great place to archive physical goods because of the earthquake and flooding threats.
Ah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
So I guess, I don't know when it was that they implemented, that they added video games, but it was maybe a year ago, where they added what they call the JS MES collection. The MES is a multiple emulator, you know, supported emulation.
It's a JavaScript MAME, isn't it, basically?
No, well, recently they included MAME support, but MES, I think the source code for MES does include MAME, but they never tried to enable it in JavaScript. Mm. They rewrote, you know, basically the emulators in JavaScript, which... I'm not a JavaScript coder, but that sounds like an amazing undertaking. I mean, that's quite an achievement. So anyway, they added support for a bunch of old computers last year, and then this week they added support for MAME, and there are 900 classic arcade games emulated with sound, full frame rate in your browser.
Full frame rate?
If it's small. If you keep it at the native res, it's actually not native arcade res, but it's like whatever the web page comes up with.
And it's...
runs great on my system.
You need Firefox. It works best with Firefox.
Is that right? Doesn't work as well with Chrome?
Chrome and Safari are okay, but not always perfect.
Interesting.
Internet Explorer is a complete shit show, obviously. But I loaded up Firefox for the first time in ages, and it worked great on my laptop. The MES project... like their goal is to emulate every computer that ever existed in the browser using JavaScript. And they're really serious about it. Like it's like Atari 2600, Atari 5200, Atari 7800, Lynx, Bally Astrocade, all these Sega Master System, Master System 2, Apple II, 2C, all that stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
And then also the MAME boards, MAME stuff as well.
To be clear, MES was a thing before the JavaScript MES.
Of course. So... I loaded up Arkanoid yesterday.
Does it play with the mouse?
I played with the keys, which was hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loaded up Burger Time.
Burger Time was good. I did Burger Time, too.
So good.
I forgot. I played that game for 40 minutes before I realized that you could use pepper to kill guys that were coming out.
Then it's like you have a superpower.
I was like, I am really good at this fucking game now. I'm amazing.
That's funny.
I'm the best.
It's like I never realized until like this week the similarity between Burger Time and Lode Runner.
Oh, but it's the same game.
It's got to be like the spiritual successor. It is the same game, except now you can make the burger
squishes
go down. Yeah.
Yeah. I never was a Lode Runner fan, but I love Burger Time.
Oh, I love Lode Runner.
What's the game? Mousetrap?
Yep.
I love Mousetrap too.
Yeah, sort of like a Pac-Man, right?
Kind of Pac-Man-y, yeah. But you can close and open the maze, and
yeah,
it really appealed to me at a young age. It's not a very good game when I play it now. What are they? How are they getting around copyright on this? Or do they just not care because they're an archival? It's for archival use.
Well, I know Jason Scott. He's an interesting guy. You should maybe invite him on your show sometime. He's the guy that led this initiative and enabled the MAME stuff, although he's not the main coder behind the project. But he's like the main video game archivist at the Internet Archive.
Okay.
He said that they're kind of going for a ask forgiveness kind of policy.
Okay. I think that's a good... I mean, a lot of the stuff, the rights are so ambiguous at this point that it's hard to know who has the rights
exactly.
to issue them.
Right. Yeah. And 99.9% of these rights holders don't even care anymore.
Right.
So it's definitely...
So steal away is what you're saying.
It's the YouTube model. No, but it's the YouTube model for publishing things, or at least having their users publish things. They have to be reported, you know.
If they cease and desist, then they'll take it down. But until then, they're going to let it stay.
And I'm sure that the Internet Archive will comply with all that stuff.
And I mean... It's a valuable service. Like those are games, especially in the case of some of the older arcade machines. Some of those boards, when the batteries die, the games are done. You can't use them anymore because they put copy protection and stuff on, like, what is it, late 80s, early 90s Capcom games like Street Fighter and stuff like that. Like some of those games, when the literal battery on the board dies, if you don't replace the battery while it's going, then you have to then hotwire the board to take out the DRM stuff, and it's a pain in the ass.
That sounds no good.
Yeah, it's real real bad. Let's see, somebody here added the drone episode of South Park, The Magic Bush. I didn't watch this yet. It's on my TiVo. Did you watch the drone episode of South Park?
Oh my gosh, yes, it was, yeah. So it was topical about quadcopters and drones. They poke fun at people calling it, you know, the hobby enthusiasts, drone enthusiasts. I'm no longer enthused about this hobby. The best thing was that the primary drone they used was based on a DJI Phantom.
Really?
Vision 2, because it has the, and they talked, they got all the details right.
They got the gimbals and all that stuff?
They didn't talk about the gimbals, but the video they showed from it, the fake video, because it's all 3D now. South Park is all 3D.
Has been for years.
And so they actually had 3D perspective images of when you had the first person video from the drone, from the quadcopter.
What was the argument? What was the
privacy? It was neighborhood watch type episode. You know, Cartman got a hold of the drone and spied on a neighbor's wife type of thing. But
it's a good setup for the show.
Yes. The interface he used, when he's holding the remote controller, it looks just like the Phantom 2. Remote, the transmitter. He had his phone mounted on it, just like we would do it. And the interface that they showed looked just like the Phantom 2 interface, but South Park for sure.
Interesting.
So they did their homework.
Well, I'm sure one of them bought a drone.
Yes, and they didn't actually partner with DJI. So
what do you think DJI will think of this episode?
I bet they will be anti that episode.
But it's giving them a lot of publicity.
Yeah, a lot of publicity. Oh, they didn't call it the Phantom either. They called the Spectre.
Well, that's nobody's going to know what they're talking about, clearly.
The Spectre drone. I thought that was funny.
HP released a what looks like a concept PC, but it's something they're actually going to sell, I think, called the Sprout. It's an all-in-one computer with a projector that dangles over the front, and then what seems like a touchpad or a tablet pad or something like that. So it will project images from above onto the tablet, and then you can draw over them or manipulate them with your hands or whatever.
And it's 3D scanning.
And it does 3D scanning.
Is it for kids?
Productivity
with
for
a name.
Artists.
With a name,
it seems like it's
that.
For designers.
With a name like Sprout.
I think that's just your PBS.
It's for creatives.
Oh, what? Norm, are you a creative?
No, God, no.
I've seen you drawing before.
That not a creative.
Are you sure about that?
I'm pretty sure.
You're wearing a t-shirt that indicates you might be a creative.
Oh.
Do you want a Sprout?
Nah, not at all.
Not even to play with? Sounds like interesting new technology.
I think it's like $2,000.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of expensive. I'd rather have a 5K Mac, iMac.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Have you guys seen it in person yet?
Yes.
It's pretty nice.
I went to the Apple store.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Even the thumbnail, like especially the thumbnails, like you open up iPhoto, it's like you don't even need to blow them up to see the detail.
That screen.
It's amazing.
That screen.
It's like touching the sun. I just wanted to pick it up and run.
It was like overload.
So one of the problems I've had with high resolution screens, for example, this laptop I'm using has a 3800 by something screen. It's almost 4K. And you want a wallpaper to match that. So with Windows, when you give it a wallpaper, I think they do some processing. They either recompress it or
scale it up,
scale it or something. Even if you give them the exact resolution, so the image quality is not going to be perfect, because having, you know, a 10 megabyte JPEG, uncompressed JPEG as your wallpaper the whole time eats up
sure
graphics memory.
Is there such a thing as an uncompressed JPEG?
No.
Well, a very low compressed, okay, almost lossless JPEG. All the images I saw on the 5K iMac, I just all the compression bugged the hell out of me.
Because you could see it.
Because you could see it.
Yep.
Because you look at, you know, like what parts of where the gradients are. You can see like JPEG artifacting. Mm-hmm. Like, nope. Oh.
Yep.
But the details were all there. And the points where they were sharp, it's so bright.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you look at an image that's, you don't get the effect when you look at an iPad. The same effect.
A Retina iPad?
A Retina iPad.
Really? Because I feel like the MacBook Pros with the Retina do look brighter than the Airs.
I think maybe the MacBook Pro Retinas, you get the same effect. But when it's stretched across a 27-inch screen,
yeah,
where your peripheral, mm-hmm, you can get to a point where you're not much of your peripheral is looking at anything but the screen, there is an immersion factor, psychological immersion that you get that I've never experienced before.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Device. It's a beautiful screen. Yeah.
I want it. I want that screen.
I just want the screen. I'm good on the iMac I have. Android 5.0, there's a date now. It's coming to like the NVIDIA Shield and the Nexus devices early. Norm, are you excited about Android 5.0?
Absolutely. Lollipop. Yeah, reviews are out on Lollipop. That's
Lollipop,
great.
Lollipop,
there's new material design. Google Lollipop has updated so many of their apps. Maps, I think, just got updated today.
Calendar, the update looks wonderful.
Gmail. You can force update if you're on Android right now with APKs, but they'll roll out soon. But everything is getting upgraded. All their apps on Play Store are getting upgraded. So even if you're OS.
Even if you're on 4 or 4.x, whatever.
You will get the new material design stuff on. And if you're on iOS, you'll get it as well. But HTC has the code now, so HTC's smartphones, NVIDIA did an announcement, and of course the new Apple Nexus devices all have Lollipop.
Interesting thing about that is that they also announced Calendar, a straight up calendar app for iOS, which they haven't had up until this point, which is good.
When's that coming out?
In the future. But they said that there will be a new materials calendar app for iOS.
That's
which
good
is
news.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
Although with Fantastical, I kind of don't, doesn't matter. But
I like Fantastical.
Fantastical.
But I'll bet Google's is going to be pretty good.
I would hope so.
Can I add something real quick to the Apple display? The one thing I wanted to check at the App Store was the refresh rate. And it's been reported now, but I wanted to confirm it is 60 hertz.
You checked it with a frame rate checking tool.
I went to a website that had 30 hertz versus 60 hertz animated GIFs. And lo and behold, smooth 60.
Good pronunciation, too.
Mm.
Norm, you went to where the magic happens a few weeks ago.
What is the magic happen?
You know, the Magic Kingdom.
Oh.
What kind of magic is happening in your bedroom?
Making stuff.
Okay. Do you have anything books? You want to announce?
Pop-up books.
Oh, pop-up books. Oh, oh. Well,
I went to Disney Animation Studios.
Those are good features.
Yeah, I only shot two videos. They're both up now.
They're both good.
I was invited down there to preview Disney's, I guess, still upcoming movie that comes out this Friday, Big Hero 6, which...
This is the inflatable robot superhero movie.
Yes, it is their first movie. Disney Animation Studios, not only the first movie that's based on a Marvel comic book, inspired by. It's not a straight adaptation. It's
I didn't know
the
it was
name
Marvel.
Is. I talked about it in my video.
I heard you say it was based on a comic book, but...
Yeah, Disney owns Marvel.
Yeah, that makes
so
perfect sense.
They went to their directors and their story team and said, you know, we want to do something that... We have all these properties now. It's strange that they would even choose to do that because it's not... At all the comic book, the characters are, the names are the same, but they're completely different characters, completely different story. It's very Disney PG, rated PG movie, but it's tied to Marvel somehow. And it's also what they call their first action movie.
First animated action movie.
The first Disney Animation Studios, which they are very proud of their lineage. You know, this is the 100th and whatever Disney animated film.
So they count the Snow White as the beginning of this.
Yes.
Okay.
And something like Bolt. Not an action movie. Bolt is a adventure film.
Uh-huh. What about The Incredibles? That's Pixar.
Oh, that's Pixar. So okay. Disney has three animation departments. They have ILM, which made Rango.
That movie's great, by
the way. It's fantastic. They have Pixar, obviously. And then they also have Disney Animation Studios.
So this is
which did all the classic cell shaded.
And then they did through like Brother Bear, and then they were shut down kind of for a while. And
they
were
shut down.
Tangled.
They did a bunch of movies that like not Chicken Little, but one of the movies that no one watched.
Okay,
Frank.
Yeah,
not a lot of people watched. And then they came back with Bolt, Winnie the Pooh.
That Winnie the Pooh, the one with the music from what's her name, from the New Girl, Zooey Deschanel. She and him.
And
is good.
They did a Princess and the Frog.
Princess and the Frog, Tangled, Wreck-It Ralph, and then Frozen, which made $1 billion.
Yep. By the time they got the Tangled, they were on a good roll.
Tangled is a solid film too.
A troubled development process. They had to, I think, redo all mm-hmm. entire look of the movie. They wanted it to be a super painterly look, and it just didn't work for that.
But they had incorporated the Pixar method by then.
Yes, the story trust.
Yep.
Which what's I like the story to think of trust? As the brain trust. This is the John Lasseter, Ed Catmull philosophy, where as directors work on films, they show the screen the movie about a dozen times to a select member, other directors mm-hmm. also working on their films, whether it's at Pixar. There's not one story trust. I think Disney Animation Studios has their own. Pixar has their own, but John Lasseter is a part of all of them. And then they take the criticisms. The idea is that people can be honest and they want to fish out all the bad things about the movie early and then rewrite the movie or redo things and not be afraid to do that.
So it's a forum for providing honest feedback.
Yes.
From people who presumably are smart.
Which is surprising that that's not how movies were made beforehand.
I don't think that's the way it works.
That's not. It's absolutely not. But Tangled was made that way. And then Wreck-It Ralph and Frozen. And this movie is so different from Frozen. It doesn't have any...
No princess.
No princess. No big song.
Is it a musical?
No, not a musical at all. Straight up action adventure movie.
Yeah.
It's a superhero origin story, which I don't think the ads clearly talk about. And then also has like robots in it. It's a very maker friendly movie. There's 3D printing in it. The kid in the movie is like super genius and he does rapid fabrication.
That's cool.
Rapid prototyping. There's a lot of like nanobot technology in it.
So it's a science fiction movie. Kind of.
Like a superhero action science fiction movie.
I am a hardcore Pixar fan. I mean, I've been to the campus and it was like going to Disneyland for me. I love every film they've made, but for the past few years, I think Disney animation has been more interesting to me personally, especially like Wreck-It Ralph and Frozen.
Yeah.
Even Tangled, I thought were better than the Pixar offerings those years.
Oh, Brave is really good, man.
See, I didn't think so. I thought Wreck-It Ralph was far and away my preferred movie.
Well, so the thing that happened at Pixar, there's two things that happened. For a long time, when you would watch a Pixar movie and then you'd watch a DreamWorks Animation or what is it, Sony Pictures Animation is the other big one.
Fox, the Paramount, they all
have they all have their anime. But you'd look at something from somebody else and it would look like a 2-year-old Pixar movie, right? Like if you look at Cloudy with the Chance of Meatballs against the Pixar movie that came out that year.
No. I would disagree. Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs is such
it's a good movie,
a gorgeous visual movie.
Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs was a bad choice. Let's say whatever came out the year that WALL-E came out, which I think was the 50-foot monster, Attack of the Monsters or whatever that movie was.
Okay. Yeah.
It looked like the Pixar movie from 2 years before. It just in terms of the amount of attention to detail and the level of detail on the art, it looked like the difference between, say, a Disney movie, a Disney short in the 50s and a Looney Tunes short in
the
50s.
If you're going purely on visuals, Brave was far and away the best looking animated picture ever.
Gorgeous.
Absolutely. But for me, the story didn't affect me as much as, Wreck-It Ralph?
Well, Wreck-It Ralph was designed to appeal to us.
Yes, thank you.
I mean, it was designed to appeal to people. It was a movie that was for people who had kids that grew up in the 80s.
And what last year it was Frozen versus Monsters University. And for me, Monsters University was enjoyable, but it's not one I even want to own. I mean, it was, which I happen to own it because I have kids, but it's not one I really care to see again in the same way I wanted to see.
Cars 2, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I even liked Cars 2, but for me, it's like those movies are fun to watch and they're beautiful, but the story of them just isn't working as well for me as the Disney animation. And I feel like part of that might be because Lasseter is, you know, dividing his time.
I don't think that's the reason. I think that it's tough to continue success.
I don't know. It seems like
the only people they were competing with was themselves.
Who? Pixar?
Pixar.
No, financially, The brand was so strong. It's a lot like Apple. You know, you have this huge rise and it's rapid growth. So many awards won, it's tough to sustain and keep on exceeding the expectations. On the technical standpoint, I think a lot of people don't realize that films, when studios work on films, they develop technologies and research that gets only used in that movie. Yeah. Wall-E has that look because the research that team, the effects team, and again, I don't think people realize that when you make an animated film, like a CG film, there's a team that's solely dedicated just to the effects of the movie. And that's not like the modeling.
Like
or the
shader
animation.
Effects, basically.
Just like the flash. Yeah, yeah. Just like the snow effects in Frozen.
Right.
That was a whole separate team. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about explosions or what the look of a movie is going to be, that's one team that does that. And that team gets, you associate the success of a movie often with that.
Yep.
It's, well, there's a tech team and there's a creative team, basically.
Well,
right?
I'm saying even within the technical side, there's the effects team, which is separate from the rendering team, and which is separate from the animation team, the people who are the quote unquote actors. They puppet all the characters. And you have to have the top in all of those teams to make a successful movie, of course, grounded in a story that's going to, people are going to care about. So
it all starts with the story, is what you're saying.
That's what they say.
I'm trying to say I look forward to this movie.
I think I am also looking forward to
You've seen a little bit of it, right?
Yeah, I saw 20 minutes of it, which looked great. I just don't know. I have no gauge of what the youth of America thinks about it.
Yeah.
It has no song. I think Fall Out Boy does a song for the movie.
So it's like a
montage.
Finished credit song or a montage song?
For a montage sequence.
That's right.
And
no Pixar movies ever
Fall Out Boy
like a musical number.
Well, Randy Newman has sung a lot of songs.
Oh, yeah, but it's not a musical
They're
film.
Montages.
Yeah, that's true.
You got a friend.
The character, I thought the vinyl, giant vinyl robot character, I think is a stroke of genius. That is the...
It's a saleable toy, right?
Not only is he a saleable toy, but he the fact that he's a robot that's inflatable...
Does he talk?
He does talk. He has a voice. He does, which, again, they don't communicate that in the trailer.
Yeah.
It's like a Wall-E. They want to evoke Wall-E.
The trailer's very charming.
But he does talk, and his voice is Scott Adsit from 30 Rock.
Hmm. Hold on. Is he one of the writers?
He's the other Liz Lemon, the bald dude, with the, not the one with the
Oh,
hat.
The old, the manager guy.
Yes.
Okay.
But they distort it, so it sounds like a robot. But the fact that they did a vinyl inflatable robot, and that they use that to their... For humor, the fact that he could deflate, the fact that
his batteries run down and he deflates.
Run down, he can squeeze through holes like for comedic value, but also that they tap into technology. I think Carnegie Mellon was doing research on soft robotics and they had taken inspiration from that. And the fact that that also taps into the rendering. So when you're talking about light rendering, you need to create a certain look for light to diffuse and bounce around inside a vinyl robot, translucent, semi-translucent robot. That was all brilliant. And also for the cute factor, they looked at three different ways this robot could walk, and they looked at a baby walking, mm-hmm. which is
cute. Babies walking is real cute.
They looked at a baby with a full diaper walking.
That's also cute.
Can confirm.
And then they also looked at baby penguins walking.
Oh.
And they chose baby penguins.
Hold on. What about baby penguins with a full diaper?
They did not do that.
Missed an opportunity there. But it's a sequel.
It was interesting to hear the animators talk about experimenting with the gait of characters.
No, I've got.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
It's cool behind the scenes.
It's out this weekend, right?
I think it's out this weekend.
Yeah. That'll do it for us this week for news. I'm going to play some music. We're a little short on time here this week, but we'll play some music and then talk about what we've been testing. Hey, Norm.
Hey, Will.
What have you been testing?
I've been testing the laptop in front of me right now.
What laptop is that? Is that a yogurt?
I wish it was a yogurt.
I wish I had some yogurt.
I do wish I had some yogurt.
Are you a Greek yogurt or a traditional yogurt person?
I am a fan of all the yogurts.
Do you like fruit in the bottom, or do you like it stirred up, or do you like no? I eat plain yogurt.
I will make the most out of whatever yogurt is given to me. If it's fruit at the bottom, I have a certain way of eating it. If it's the mixed yogurt, I have a certain way of eating it. If it's Greek yogurt, I savor it differently.
Yeah. Greek yogurt tastes like ice cream without being frozen. And I eat just plain yogurt now. Plain yogurt. Strauss. If you get Strauss yogurt, you should try that. It's really good. What's the laptop you're
using? So this is the Lenovo Yoga Pro 3. We reviewed the Yoga Pro 1 and the Yoga Pro 2, which was separate from, like I said, a separate Yoga line. The Yoga Pro 3, they're top of the line. This is the one that Microsoft is actually championing right now on TV commercials. You know how they had the Surface 3 versus the MacBook Air comparison ads?
Yeah.
I think those are actually pretty effective. They're now doing the exact same thing with this laptop. Improved hinge design, so you can actually use it like a laptop, like a tablet, like a stand,
it's
like a movie
stand. It's pretty thin for a fully-fledged laptop,
it
especially when it folds over.
So much thinner than last year's. I really like the industrial design of this.
How big is the screen?
It is a 13.3-inch screen, 3200 by 1800
man,
resolution.
Man, that's really nice.
And then but Windows 8.1 still, I believe, has some scaling problems. Like, for example, I'm running this at 150% scaling, which I 125% scaling, which I like.
Which gives you what an effective resolution of what, like 1920 by 1200 or something?
A little higher than that, like 20 something.
Okay.
Maybe 2560 or around there. But applications like Premiere, for example, all the icons, everything is super small.
It's got an oddly shiny hinge.
The hinge design is based on watch band, I think they call it, design, and it is they want to improve the rigidity of the hinge, and so, I think they succeeded at that.
So, like, when you have the tablet up like that where the keys are resting face down on the table and you tap on
screen,
it still bounces pretty good, though.
It bounces, but it does not droop at all.
Oh, okay. I get it.
I'm bouncing it, and it's not falling.
That's an interesting aesthetic choice. I might have put rubber over top of that so you didn't see all the shiny bits. How much is it? But we're going to do a full video on it in the future.
We'll do a full video. I believe it starts at $1,200 and, of course, can be upgraded. The things I care about most about this right now is the battery and the screen quality.
Well, and the scaling on Windows remains a concern for me.
I think it'll matter less when Windows 10 comes out.
Why isn't scrolling smoother? Is that a touch issue or is that a refresh issue?
That is a touch issue.
All right.
That is a Chrome issue right now.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm. But if you're talking about, for example, if you try it again.
Yeah, it's smooth. Yeah.
You know what we didn't talk about was last night on the election results. We're recording this on Wednesday. CNN, Microsoft apparently paid CNN a ton of money to have Microsoft services on the set. Presumably paid them a ton of money to have Microsoft services on the set.
It's like the NFL.
Yeah, just like the NFL. And, well, you know the problem with the NFL, right? We're using what? These iPad-like devices.
Yes.
Microsoft Surfaces.
Yes.
That was a huge endorsement. so on the election coverage, it seemed like many of the people that were on CNN were using the Surfaces as stands for their iPads.
Oh, no.
They were just leaning an iPad up against the Surface.
Oh, no. It happens on the NFL all the time, too. The Surfaces are everywhere, but no one even knows what it's called.
No one even uses them. Yes,
that's really disappointing.
Yeah. So anyway, well, why is it disappointing? They're paying a shitload. Hey, we'll put Surfaces on the set.
I'll actually use it.
Norm will actually use it. I'll use it as an iPad stand. You know, let's make a deal, Microsoft.
I don't think we have the same kind of reach as the elections coverage.
I don't know, man. We're really good in the demographic that we're in. Real solid.
That's right.
I bet more people under the age of 25 watch us than the election results. I've been testing the Kindle Voyage for the last 2-3 weeks.
Now, which one's that?
This is it's the new high-end Kindle. It's an e-ink device.
Right.
So it's the $200 Kindle e-ink device. They redid the industrial design. The Paperwhite still exists, but it has the same kind of backlight as the Paperwhite, so you can use it in the dark. It's a little tiny bit smaller, a little tiny bit lighter, but the screen size is the same. And instead of having a recessed screen, it has a solid face. So, like, it's more like an iPad or a Nexus tablet or a phone or something like that. I really like it, but like, it is not a thing that people who have Paperwhites should be worried about upgrading to.
Yeah.
The screen is a higher resolution. It's 300 PPI versus like 217 or something PPI. It's almost indistinguishable unless you're looking at them side by side. If you really kind of squint at it and you set it on the smallest point setting, you can tell a difference without looking at them side by side. But it's not like the jump from non-retina to retina devices when you're talking about iPads or something like that.
I'm sure they sold a ton of them.
You think? They're sold out until December 1st.
Exactly. I think they sold a ton of them. I think people are desperate for reasons to spend money.
And you mean
the new shiny, better, higher resolution.
Really?
I'm gonna spend $200 on it.
Amazon has a phone, they'll sell them.
Yeah, you can get it for free.
Can you?
Yeah, 99 cents. You get a free year of Prime. You only have to sign up for a phone contract that's worth $1,200. I also spent some time with the iPad Air 2. We've had that for a couple of weeks now.
I picked that up when I went to the Apple Store too.
I haven't held one yet.
It's remarkably light.
I'll take the cover off.
Under a pound. No, he's right. He's right, Will.
You gotta have
you need
the
raw sensation.
It's pretty nice.
Where's our iPad Air?
It's over there.
Oh Jesus!
You Siri here. Let me thumb it.
Oh Siri, Siri always wants to be a part of the conversation.
Try again. There you go.
It's
don't tweet.
It's really is that much better than the old iPad Air. I'm sorry, than the old iPad Air, iPad Mini with Retina.
My objection to it is just the physical size. Like the only thing I don't like about it is that it's big.
Yeah.
I like the smaller size of the Mini still. But it is really, really fast. The battery is awesome. It's really nice to have Touch ID on the iPad, less so for logging in than it is for using stuff like 1Password.
Mm-hmm. Your wife arrived home.
Oh, that's great. Having 1Password is the touch sensor, having 1Password have access to the touch sensor has changed the iPad and the iPhone from my least favorite places to use that product, because you always have to type in. I have like a 36 character passphrase, so it's a fucking nightmare to type in on the touchpad.
Yeah.
Now you just hit the thumb on the button and it works every time.
Uh-huh. And it's undoubtedly the best full size iPad yet.
Stop Jesus it. Christ. Stop it. It's very thin. It's very small. It feels almost flimsy. It's so thin.
Thinner than the iPad Mini.
It is thinner than the iPad Mini.
Is it thinner than your new phone?
You mean the Duke? It's probably not thinner than your phone.
Yep.
Nope. The phone's thicker. Yeah, it's thinner than the phone. Yes.
That's impressive.
I don't think it's worth $500.
If you're in the market for a new iPad,
used to like this stuff.
I do.
And Norm hates everything now. It's his new policy.
I miss the old Norm.
I'm getting that for my parents.
He's disdainfully getting it for his parents.
No, they need it. They love their iPad, and I think this is going to be great for them.
That is definitely the one.
I'm getting the 128 gig one for them because they need for the photos.
If you're looking at an iPad 3,
I love.
If you
iPad
have an
Mini.
iPad 3, then you're in a. This is a good upgrade for you. Like Gina uses this as her main. Her iPad 3 is her main computer now. Mm-hmm. She doesn't use the laptop. She only uses the Mac iMac for photos and stuff. And rarely even that. Usually she just says, hey, can you get photos for me? So like it makes a ton of sense.
I was tempted because I have an AT&T upgrade and I was like, oh, I can go to the store and get an iPhone just so I have one. Cause I've sometimes
just so you have one.
It's nice to know. Yeah.
And I don't think that's a good use of my $200.
No, you should use it to get a Samsung Galaxy 6 or
I don't want that either. I don't want that either.
HTC 2 or whatever.
Or whatever is out there. No, I don't want that either.
I'm kicking myself for my solution a couple weeks ago of getting another iPad Mini.
Yeah, that was a mistake.
Because it's the same thing as the iPad 2. As one of our listeners reminded me shortly after the podcast, it's the damn lightning connector. That's what fooled me. Because the iPad 2 has the 30-pin connector. I thought it was a generation later.
Well, so...
But it's not.
Oh, you got the OG low-res.
You got the low-res for your kids.
And now, it's just like, they're so slow. I'm trying to like log into the App Store and it's taking me a minute on those things.
Well, so that iPad Mini, the OG first-gen iPad Mini that is really just an iPad 2, is literally the nightmare for app developers right now, because they're looking at support. It means that they're effectively looking at supporting the iPad 2 for like 5 years from now. Because they're still selling it this year. Mm-hmm. So anyway,
it's a good GPS device. I mean, if you have the LTE version, it's fantastic for the car.
I installed Yosemite on my iMac and it was a debacle. I got midway through the install process and it said, hey, there's a hard disk error. You should reboot and we'll fix it. And then we'll keep installing. And I rebooted and it didn't fix it. And it didn't keep installing. And then it was too late to go back to the install. And I was like, that's fine. I back stuff up. I'm backed up on both with Crash Plan and to a Time Machine hard drive. So I just wiped the machine and put the Time Machine Restore back. And I loaded up the Restore. And when I opened the applications folder, the furthest in the alphabet it got was I. So everything after iTunes wasn't there, like system preferences and the utilities folder and disk utility and all of that stuff. So that was pretty good.
Now, full disclosure, you had replaced the hard drive.
It's a fucking computer. You should be able to replace the hard drive.
Maybe or maybe not. That had something to do with
it. It's an old iMac. It's not the new one.
Okay. Okay. I'm just saying.
I took a 3.5-inch hard drive out and I put a new 3.5-inch hard drive in.
Which I agree. You should be able to do.
I think it should be easier to do. You described the process to me. It sounded like a nightmare.
It's not that bad, but it's not.
You have to take the screen.
Well, okay, where else is there a hole?
Yeah, exactly.
It's trade-offs for a beautiful design.
Yeah, like I have a machine that doesn't have any cables coming out of it. I like that, and I'm willing to take the screen off to replace the hard drive once. And I mean, I've had it for 5 years, so it's not like, you know, the 1 terabyte hard drive started getting hinky and I got nervous about it. So I just bought a 4 terabyte hybrid drive, plugged it in, and it works fine.
Yeah.
Until this, you know, clusterfuck. So I'm back. I'm restoring from Crash Plan now. I'm downloading 300 gigs of videos and photos.
Oh, boy.
Which is always what you want to be doing.
Is there an option for them to mail you something?
No. Yeah, they'll mail you a hard drive.
Oh, I thought that was Backblaze only.
No, Crash Plan.
They do that now?
When I bitched about.
That's cool.
When I bitched about my backup failing, my time machine backup, Crash Plan sent me a tweet and was like, hey, you know, you can get us to send you a hard drive. We'll totally do that if you want that.
Oh, they think you're the other Will Smith.
No. Everyone gets the option.
I'm just kidding.
How much is it for them to send you a hard drive?
I'm looking right now. It wasn't terribly expensive. I think it's like the price of the hard drive plus shipping plus a little bit more.
Well, if you have 3 terabytes of stuff, I mean, they have 6 terabyte hard drives now, so who knows?
Yeah, but I mean, realistically, the 4 terabyte hard drive is not full. So the 4 terabyte, I'd replace a 1 terabyte hard drive a few months ago. You know, actually, that probably is the place to get the files that I'm worried about that I'm missing if they aren't on the Crash Plan, because I bet that hard drive still has all that stuff on it. You can, hold on, where is it? External drive backup? Nope. Restore to door priority recovery. That's it. The quickest way to restore your files and get your emotional sanity back is this. What you need to know, I want $165. So basically it includes return shipping. So that means you have to send the hard drive back. We can ship your backup to your hard drive so you can record blah, blah, blah. I assume you send it back.
Hopefully it's not a hard drive that gets corrupted on the way here. Or it's an old hard drive.
Man,
how many times do we use those?
It's fine as long as it's not like that's going to be the only copy of your backup. If the hard drive conks out, then they'll just send you another one. It's just more time. Yeah. The other thing that they're doing now that's new is for $125, they'll send you a hard drive that you can use to seed your backup so you don't have to upload 3 gigs to the internet. That's new since 3 terabytes. I signed up. 3 terabytes.
Oh,
to the
I see.
Internet.
And then you send it back to them.
Yeah, that's new since the last time I signed up.
I'd rather just upload it.
Me too.
It gets updated.
It took a month.
So what?
Yeah, it's 1 month and you're paying for it. It's peace of mind. It's worth it.
Call of Duty Advanced Warfare. We're running out of time. What did you think, Jeremy?
Thumbs up. I like all those games. I mean, but the multiplayer is what everybody cares about. I don't care about that.
Right.
I just play the single player campaign. Every time I play a Call of Duty game, I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe that so many people came together and made this game. The amount of detail in these games is just off the chart, and I feel bad because I can't possibly appreciate everybody's work.
The new one is unbelievable. Like, So I haven't liked the last couple.
Oh, you haven't?
I wasn't a fan of the branching storyline stuff in COD Blops 2.
Very confusing.
Because it was really confusing and it didn't work very well with the controller.
Yeah.
And I like to play these games in the living room on the big TV, even though I'm playing the PC version. The Ghost, I thought, was just kind of a stinker, an off year for them. The face capture stuff, whatever. However, they're getting Kevin Spacey into that game.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's Kevin Spacey as Kevin Spacey, man.
Some of the cutscenes are pretty damn photorealistic.
Yeah.
What was last year's?
Ghosts. It was the one with the dog.
And the new gameplay mechanics are very gamey. You know, it's like if you were to come up with a platforming first-person shooter game and you wanted to, you know, give your character the ability to do things they can't do in real life. Maybe,
double jump.
Maybe let them have a jetpack, double jump, or maybe allow them to pull up a shield. And
how does it compare to Titanfall?
I haven't played multiplayer, and Titanfall's all multiplayer, so I don't know.
So yeah, it's cool.
The thing I do like is that the character progression, you kind of unlock new powers and stuff like that, which makes it's a little more interesting than just unlocking guns, which is something they added to some of the more recent single player games. I'll probably play some multiplayer of this. It seems appealing.
Let's play that co-op.
I'm totally down for that. Is it 2 players or more?
I don't know.
Let's find out, and we'll play some. Somebody asked about my daughter's Halloween costume. We made her Chew from Tuesday. I posted a couple of pictures. She was very cute. It was a panda costume for off the shelf with a green striped T-shirt that we found at all. We went to Old Navy and Gap and all the places you buy clothes for babies, Target, and found the one that was the closest to the right green stripes. And then ordered a bomber's helmet, a bombardier helmet from Etsy.
That sold it.
And then cut holes in the bombardier helmet to sew Minnie Mouse ears on. So you can go and buy Minnie Mouse ears that are on like little barrettes at costume shops. And we bought some of those and sewed those into the helmet with thread and hot glue. And then Gina painted around her eyes and nose so that she looked like a panda. She was very cute.
Cool.
She was very excited by herself.
You win.
I think that's it. Do you want to talk about the RX-100? We're sounds like the block's burning down.
Who?
The your new camera. Somebody had asked if you had any more thoughts about your new point and shoot.
Oh no, I see. After using it for a while. Yeah, I saw it. I love it. I'm taking it to Disneyland in 4 days.
Oh, I'm so jealous. That's gonna be a good time.
Disney
last year, and that's cool. That's interesting.
Is this your second year in a row you've gone to Disney?
No, I went earlier this year.
Oh, okay.
And I went earlier this year with the RX-100 Mark II, and I'm going now 6 months later with RX-100 Mark III.
How about that?
So I get to compare photos.
Cool.
Ooh. What's your go to ride when you're at Disneyland, Norm?
Indiana Jones.
Oh, that they don't have that one at Disney World.
Really?
I don't think so.
Space Mountain, baby. It is all about Space Mountain.
Space Mountain's great. Thrilling, love it.
It's got the old 70s kind of space aesthetic.
Closed.
It's closed.
Yeah.
Closed?
Oh, no, it's got that maintenance.
Music pumping in every chair. Every chair feels like the main.
Is it side by side in Disneyland?
One person, one person. Yeah.
Or tandem. Like you sit in front of the person behind you.
You sit in front of the person behind you for Space Mountain.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. But it's a 4-person car.
Yeah.
Right,
so there's two cars and each one has two seats, but they're front. Yeah. That's the way it is in Disney World, too.
New Star Tour is pretty good, too.
Really?
Yeah.
We were down there when that opened and didn't go.
The lines are crazy.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
That ride makes me sick.
You wouldn't like the new Star Tours?
The old one made me nauseous.
You would like the new Star Tours.
Maybe.
It's a gamble, literally, because you don't know
what you're going
to get.
That's right.
Oh, it's different every time.
They have two different segments, or maybe three, like three sections, and then each of the sections can get rotated out with a different intro or different segment.
Will the Haunted Mansion still be Halloweened up?
Yes.
Nice.
I think it's perfect. Because
they go through Christmas with that, right?
Nightmare Before Christmas is Halloween and Christmas, so why not keep it for the whole holiday?
Can you walk between Halloween Land and Christmas Land?
I don't think so.
Oh.
That's not.
I want to see the behind-the-scenes Disneyland tour done by Tested.
That's not going to happen.
We would love to do that.
Make it happen.
But access is rarely granted to anyone.
We have talked to many people who work at Disney in different departments, including like Imagineering and stuff like that. They're like, yeah, good luck.
Good luck.
Barbara Walters can't do it. I don't think you guys can.
State secrets.
So that'll do it for us today. We'll do questions next week. We're almost out of outros. So I've gone through a big long list. If you guys have outros you want to submit, if we have said something dumb lately, smack it into a video, into an audio file, upload it to SoundCloud. Make sure you check the download link so that we can download it and play it. But that'll do it for us this week. Jeremy Williams, thank you for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
At Jerware on Twitter.
Yep.
GameFraw.me.
Uh-huh.
I think we're going to post your talk next week.
Oh,
from,
sweet.
I should have said this in the lead.
No, it's okay.
Dude, you absolutely killed it on the stage show.
You're very kind.
We got compliments on your talk all night. Like you were easily one of the top two or three talks.
Who was the top talk?
I'm not going to say. It was everybody. We love everybody equally.
I had a great time. That was one of the best days of the year for me, and I'm so glad you guys had the show. It was a huge success. It felt like it went seamless.
How
you guys pulled it off.
How nervous were you? You seemed very well prepared, but when we talked to you 2 or 3 days before, you were, I don't know, you're kind of an even keel guy.
Preparation J.
For me, it's all about
what's
rehearsal.
Preparation J. Are you saying
he's prepared?
Oh, Jeremy.
Yeah. For me, it's just all about rehearsing and preparing. I can't get up there and improvise. I just had to rehearse it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's really strange. I had the things I wanted to say, but once you get up on stage, completely different delivery
from
how I rehearsed it.
Mm-hmm.
I just got up and said stuff the same way I always do.
You guys did great. It was a fun show.
You didn't seem... The danger of getting overprepared for me is that I seem like what I'm saying is canned, and then that's never good. And you didn't have that at all. You had a really nice flow and cadence through the whole thing. And I thought you did a lovely job. People were very interested in the game frame afterwards.
Yeah, I had a lot of people come up and ask me about that. So
there you go.
Too bad I'm not selling anymore.
Oh,
they're all
no.
gone forever.
Yep. Well, there's going to be another round, but just a handful.
Okay.
Yep.
So if you want to get in on that, is there a way to, or is it just friends and family?
No, ledsec.com, ledsec.com.
Okay.
If you try to add one to your cart, you will join a wait list and you'll be notified as soon as they're on the site.
Excellent.
Wow.
So there you go. That'll do it for us this week. Norman Chan, at nchan on Twitter. Tested every day. Lenovo Yoga. Anything else you're interested in sharing with us?
Nothing I can talk about.
Okay. We'll be back next week with another edition of This Is Only a Test. See you guys then. Oh, today's outro comes to us from the Windy Apple.
Hi there, I didn't see you.
Tested.
This guy's chasing you, and you're like, oh, no, and then he slams into you, and then your butt rumbles.
It is jarring and delightful in a way that I have not experienced at party game.
Eat pig eat ball, I think.
Pig eat ball.
See you guys next week.